Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/betches.
Welcome back to Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. And Sarah, it's another week where I'm over us. I don't care about us right now. Let our listeners know why I don't care about us.
Yes, we are not cool. Today, we're so excited to have the directors of BS High. Welcome. Thank you for getting us both into football, sort of.
Yes.
You're welcome.
What was both of y'all's relationships with like the sport of football before diving into this? Like, were both of you like super fans, or were you kind of like, what is an interception? Like, what was the energy going in on that regard? And I think interception is a term that is used for football.
I've been following football my whole life, so I'm very familiar with high school football, college football, the NFL. I think it's a little different kind of football for Martin.
Yeah, no, it's not football, as far as I'm concerned, I'm afraid. Football is the game that we play in the rest of the world with our feet and a circular object, but we'll let that one go. So for me, like, I could tell the story was crazy because based on what I know about football, about American football, I could tell that this was a crazy game. You know what I mean? Like, the just from watching the highlights and watching the kids run into each other when they were trying to catch a ball or trying to kick the ball back down the field and hitting their own team in the back of the head. And like, I was watching this and I was like, this isn't very good, is it? It immediately was more than sports just from as soon as we were exposed to the story.
And it's so hard too with like athletes in high school. It's such an important thing for them to focus on and develop, like they devote their life to it, because that's kind of the opportunity for them to then go to college. And then you go to the college that it's like, you're in the great league, and then you could play pro and everything like that. So it's kind of really some of the most precious years for anybody who wants to do the sport, to do it well and do it in a place where they think they can thrive. And I feel that was one of the most like infuriating parts of this documentary for me to watch, was to see these kids who like had what they thought was like a golden ticket to their future, and it was completely a dupe.
Absolutely. That was what just captivated us immediately. It's like, I mean, not just for an athlete, anybody who's 17, 18, 19 years old, remember how much longer every year lasts when you're in your teenage years, right? How you know, if like someone explained to me once that, you know, like opportunity in life is like a pyramid, you know what I mean? You get smaller and smaller every year. It's not that you get less opportunity necessarily, but you get like less width of it, you know? And I think when you're young, it's so much opportunity and so much of your direction of your life is being shaped in those few years, that for us, that was the most kind of wild thing, that people were taking kids in these places and treating that time so cavalierly, you know, without thought, without regard for the scope of impact it was having on these poor kids.
And are there any positive updates that we didn't get to at the end with some of the kids?
Yeah, there's a few. Mario, who's in the film, he's playing college football right now. He just got a New York Times article written about him, which is super exciting. Trillian, who is the quarterback who features in it a lot, he's also currently playing with the team. And JD, Justin, who the film ends with a video, a music video of him recording his song about his time at BSI. His music career has been going really well ever since the film came out. So yeah, a lot of the guys are doing really well right now. And also Pahokee, who's in the film, we set up a GoFundMe when to come out with the premiere, and it's been a huge success. So he's on his way to go to college as well. So it's been a lot of, that was kind of one of our main hopes, was that we could, from all the madness that these kids, you know, kind of went through, which we should probably talk a little bit about for your listeners, because obviously hearing that a bunch of random kids, good things are happening for them it's sweet, but I think you need to understand how awful what was dumped on them was to appreciate that almost.
It's sweet, but it's how, you know, your accent is so charming, because when you hear like a great thing happen to someone, I'm recording in New Jersey, if you're like, oh my God, this happened, I'm like, why the fuck do I care? And you're like, no, you want to care, because after watching this documentary, you're like, you almost feel like they were painted into a corner where you're like, what, how can anything come from like this story that you're like, how is there a happy ending for any of them because of what was dealt to them? So to our listeners who haven't maybe checked out the documentary yet, or they're not as familiar with the story, can you guys kind of like talk about how you first heard about it? Like from your, like from both of your ends, to be like, what made you first like look at this story and realize, oh, there's more to uncover here, or it's a story that needs to be told?
I saw it when it was happening in real time, and when Twitter was having like the time of their lives with it, and just kind of enjoying the fun that everybody else is enjoying of what we thought the story was on the surface, and how everyone was just making fun of this team and the coach and everything that had been happening. And we had talked about it just as a thing that was happening, because it was like everywhere. I might have at the time tweeted like, I hope the documentary about this movie is called BS High or something like that.
And manifestation online.
And it's sort of, it fell right into our laps, which was completely unexpected, because we had no idea. We weren't trying to make a movie about it or anything like that. It just kind of came to us through one of Martin's friends.
And I think, you know, to step back even more a little, you know, to really give some context here, you know, it was about just a little over 2 years ago. It was the Bishop Sycamore, BS High, was the internet story of the day, kind of almost for, you know, almost made it a week, you know, which these days is a lot of currency on Twitter, yes. Right? It was the story of a high school football team called Bishop Sycamore that played IMG Academy, who were the biggest, fanciest, they're the kind of like the Lakers or whatever of high school football, live on ESPN at the Hall of Fame stadium, like one of the most prestigious football school stadiums in America. And they got demolished. It was so embarrassing and bad that by halftime, the entire internet was blowing up, because not only was the game embarrassing, it was so embarrassing that the announcers, the radio, the, you know, the commentators who were being paid to promote the event by ESPN, effectively, they were so embarrassed by what they were seeing. They started kind of investigating as it was in real time, as it was happening, because a kid tore his ACL in the first quarter. They didn't have his name or his number on the roster that they'd been given. Right? Like, kids kept getting hurt. They kept going down. IMG could literally score at any point they wanted to. Like, they just stopped trying. It was not a fair game. And so then as the announcers start looking into it, so does Twitter, all in real time. Right? And they start discovering that there's no real school here. There's no physical school. No one's ever graduated from this school. The kids had played a game 2 days before. The same kids that are playing this game had played it 2 days before. And then they find out that the coach has an outstanding domestic abuse warrant. They find out that he's got like 20 plus lawsuits, that he's had a previous school that was shut down. And this, the kind of the torrential energy that kind of goes around this thing. And then the key thing that Twitter loved beyond everything is they discovered that a lot of these players weren't high school kids, that they were too old and they were coming back. So what you effectively had was a bunch of 15 and 16 year olds playing for IMG, kicking the asses of a bunch of 19 and 20 year olds playing for this fake high school that didn't really exist, that had just been set up as a scam to create a high school football team. So the internet loved it because it was obviously just so meme worthy. And then, as Trayvon says, a friend of mine kind of called us one day and was like, hey, would you be interested in making the Bishop Sycamore film? And we were like, well, I mean, maybe, who do you have? And they're like, the main guy, the guy who did the con, he wants to talk. And we're like, what? No way. There's no way that guy wants to talk. That would be madness.
And it's almost like he didn't stop talking throughout the entire documentary. There are so many times where I was like, does he know what he's saying? Could you two talk about the experience with that? Because so many times when me and Sarah look at documentaries, usually it just says in a little bit at the top of the film, like XYZ chose not to comment on it. Quite the contrary for BSI.
No, he couldn't stop commenting.
I mean, what was it like to interview someone who was like lying?
It's challenging because, you know, Roy is trying to run the same con on you that he ran on everyone else, which is to charm you into liking him and believing him. And it's pretty effective if you don't know how to protect yourself against it. And mm-hmm. you can feel yourself wanting to give in to what he's giving off because it's so well crafted and it's so charming and he's so good at it. But you also know, like, there's just no way this guy is telling the truth. And that's where you kind of have to remind yourself to lean into, you know, what you're here for, which is to find out, you know, what's really going on and what really happened. And that was why I think we wanted to talk to Roy first and then talk to everyone else and then come back to him with what we found, because that was going to be the most effective way of telling this particular story, of going, taking the audience on the same journey that everyone who encounters Roy goes through, which is you experience the man trying to win you over, trying to con you, and then you go find out what he actually does and who he actually is, and then you confront him with that information. And so that was kind of how we approached trying to, you know, deal with someone who's probably going to lie to you the entire time.
I also love the moment halfway through when he storms off because he wants a break, but is still filmed on camera shouting and then comes back to talk more, where you're kind of like, because even in the beginning of the documentary, people are like, this is probably his dream. He loves himself. And of course, like, just like narcissistic behavior, like he's like, oh, this is a perfect layup for him to think that he can form a web of lies that will be like, oh, Max is gonna, the audience is gonna just see that me, I'm a hero to these people, only to realize that doesn't work anymore.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Give you two sort of inside things that aren't, that didn't make it in the film, but we'll speak to that. One is, that wasn't the first time he stormed out. I think that was maybe the, like, it was definitely at least, I think it might have been the third time. The first time he stormed out, so we filmed him first, as Trayvon said. We did 3 12-hour days, like 10 hours of interviews each day. That was how we started the whole project, to kind of get his side of it. And then we went off and fact-checked that with everybody else. So about halfway through the first day, he storms out of the room. Again, we picked up the cameras and ran after him, and he got into his car and he called his girlfriend at the time, and he's like, I don't know how to be vulnerable. How can I be vulnerable? We're like filming him. He knows his mic is still on, right? He knows he's being filmed. Yes. Like, it's not one of these things where, like, he's wearing the mic, he's very savvy, you know. So it was always theater, you know. The one that we put in, the one that we put in the film was the least theatrical, because that's, you know, when you see it in context of the film, that's when we really tried to. Because one thing we didn't want to do with this film, there have been so many of these kind of con person stories, and we loved it. We took it on for that because, I mean, there's no kind of more American character in all of literature than the kind of the carnival con man, right? The kind of P.T. Barnum, Donald Trump, kind of like fake it till you make it, lie and tell the suckers what they want to hear. Kind of, it's such an American character, and Roy is. So to have access to that person was like, you know, but we wanted to make sure we held his feet to the fire. And we didn't just make it fun. And so the moment that you're talking about, Danny, in that when we showed him a video of, because his whole defense all the way through the whole thing, I think his defense to this day is, we did good by those kids. We did good by those kids. They're just ungrateful. We did good. And we're like, well, if that's true, then why does every single kid you ever spoke to say this about you? And the craziest thing of all is that at the end of that 3 days, we're like, which kids should we talk to, Roy? Like, we'll start with the kids that you think we should talk to. We told him, we're like, we're not here to do a gotcha. We're not here to kind of like take you down. We just want to find out what happened. Tell us who to start with. Yeah. The kids who told us point blank that he ruined their lives are the kids he told us to talk to. Like, we talked to some other kids as well, Mario and Isaiah, some of the kids in there. But like, the majority of the kids you see in the film are literally the ones he told us to talk to.
I have to imagine he's had some words since this has all come out. Has he reached out to you guys?
Oh,
yeah.
Not to me.
No, he reached out to me all the time. You know, if you're listening to this, Roy, please leave me alone. I've had to stop replying because it's not sincere. He's obviously furious with us and confused, but he writes these very kind of sweet messages, but he's just trying to engage. I think Roy fundamentally is of the opinion that nothing bad ever happens to Roy, even if he just had to declare bankruptcy the week before the film came out. He owes like, what, $500,000? $1 million in loans? I forget what it is now. Somewhere like that. Like 30 open lawsuits. Like, I mean, the man's like, he can't have a bank account, he can't get a job, he can't, but like in his mind, he's still winning, right? And so it's this incredible disconnect. Like, the amount of work it takes to be a con man, the amount of emotional labor and like practical, like how many lies you have to remember and all this kind of stuff. It's like, if he just tried to get a real job, he could be, he's super smart and charismatic. He chose to take advantage of kids instead of getting a real job, which is a real shame.
I know, it is that interesting thing. I feel like watching con artist documentaries and everything like that, you realize how, maybe not to like always those extremes, but you like start to look around like the people in your life that it's like, oh, you kind of are giving me a little bit of that, where it's just kind of where you're saying like nothing can go wrong with them, or there's always like the little spin on it. Did you guys also have moments where you're like, oh, maybe I should stop inviting that one friend to brunch?
That one friend was like some parts of me, right? Like,
that's real.
Like,
that's real,
like,
though.
Super
yes.
real. Like, I was like, one thing I told him at one point, I was like, dude, if you came and got a job in media as opposed to like with children, like something where there is value in telling stories and creating emotional narratives and like, as opposed to like, I think that's part of the fascination with con men, right? Is we all know that we tell the best version of ourselves lots and lots of the time, right? Like, that, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. In fact, in many, many situations in life, it's the healthiest thing to do, to present the best version of yourself. However, when it becomes an obsession, when you are unable to actually have any moral touch points where you're like, hey, am I just lying right now? Am I presenting the best version of myself, or am I delusional? Like the, you know, the DeLulu kind of scales, he wasn't putting any weight on them. But yes, I think it is. When you watch these con man shows, you're like, I mean, it's bad, but go on. I hope you get away with a little bit of it. And I think, you know,
there are times like, right? That, yes.
Like, not, I think that's why, like, you know, when I watched the Firefest thing or whatever, I was like, I really hope this party's either amazing or a complete shit show.
Yeah. But it's like what you said too, where it's like when like watching like an Anna Delvey documentary, I'm like, okay, she's scamming billionaires and she's just being silly in like the Lower East Side. Who among us has? But versus when you're like, oh, you're jeopardizing the future of like children. It's when you're like, you have to, if you want to con and have anybody on your side, you need to pick, you need to like reevaluate how you're doing.
Yeah, Bomani Jones, this character we have in the film, he says it perfectly. He's like, look, you know, in America, TV is everything and fame in it, but like even infamy has value, but not infamy where you're taking advantage and damaging the lives of children. There is actually a line there. And as Trayvon said earlier, what we wanted to do, the way we shaped the film, is we wanted to make sure that it didn't feel heavy-handed. Like, it wasn't like, oh, bad man, blah, blah. We wanted to show you what it felt like to be charmed by Roy. Because it's extremely appealing when he does his thing. You know, you can see why these kids fell for it and why the parents fell for it, you know?
And Trayvon, you were saying that you've been following sports like your whole life, like from like high school, college, football, everything like that. Had it made you like open your eyes in any way, or did you already kind of like were attuned to like how athletes are treated, even when it's in a all things are going according to plan. Technically, you know what I mean? Not to this extreme, but did it kind of make you look at how the athletic industry in that regard shapes kids, for better or for worse?
I mean, I played AAU basketball, so I knew how dirty and dangerous and crazy high school sports can be for kids and even college sports. And so the story in and of itself was familiar because of the nature of how they were conned, which is what you dangle, the carrot you dangle in front of them is the carrot that gets dangled in front of a lot of kids in high school, except oftentimes, most of the time, that carrot that's being dangled actually has real value behind it if you can grab it, if you can get it. Whereas in this case, Roy took advantage of the facts that that carrot dangling happens to these kids, but there was no nothing to offer. There was no real carrot there. There was nothing for the kids to actually obtain.
He couldn't even afford a carrot. The Bishop Sycamore budget did not even extend to a single carrot.
he told them there were going to be carrots to be dangled.
Yeah.
Once the money came in, but the money never came in for the carrots to be dangled.
There's going to be a whole carrot farm, you know, and it just.
That whole system is super familiar to me, and it was why this was so appealing to do, because I had never seen, of all the things I have seen, I never seen anyone be taken advantage of in this way, where it was just a complete scam, a complete con in the way that it was. And so that was what made it such a fascinating story to want to tell, on top of the fact that, like, I know so many kids like them. Like, I grew up with kids like them. I've seen how brutal and how bad it can be when, like we were saying, when the carrot is actually real. Mm-hmm. So it's even more brutal when you end up not making it, and then you find out that you never could in the first place. Mm-hmm. That even if you had done the thing right, there was still nothing going to happen for you.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part, where you realize they lost no matter what.
Mm-hmm. I was really shocked, like, watching the footage of that game, that number one, any old high school could just be like, oh yeah, we're going to play the biggest football high school. And also just that nobody stopped the game as these kids were getting injured left and right.
The helmet!
Yeah, that.
Yeah, the helmet shit. It's crazy, right? Like, I mean, I honestly think there is no story here. So Ben Faree, who, if you've seen the film, is this kind of, he's the most amazing nemesis. If you imagine Roy, the coach, is this kind of deeply charismatic kind of con man. He has a nemesis in this guy, Ben Faree, who's a very by the rules kind of nerdy kind of, he works for the Ohio State Athletic Commission. Anyway, he'd been telling them for years that this thing was a scam and it was dangerous and it shouldn't happen. Nobody cared. And I think the only reason that we're sitting here with you guys right now is because the announcers couldn't help themselves, driven by that fear, Sarah. They were like watching this thing. They're like, this is immoral, right? Like, this should not be happening. They're not playing basketball where you're getting outclassed and so you're losing 80-0 or whatever. You're playing football, and so you're smashing into people who are hurting you over and over and over again. And, you know, I think the other thing as well, like, kind of following that thread even further, is that, like, you know, we're sitting here on your, you know, wonderfully Not Another True Crime. We did not expect, when we got this job, even when we sort of started learning about it, we're like, this thing's going to be mostly funny. Right. This is mostly funny. This is a bunch of idiots that kind of, you know, we joked, they were like, they girl bossed too close to the sun. You know what I mean? They just, that's kind of what we thought it was going to be. And then the more we got into it, the more we realized, no, this is just a litany of crimes. They're small. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them are small, but in volume, this is a criminal enterprise that is endangering not just the futures of these children, but also their physical health right now. And that's where, you know, to go back to your point, Sarah, the idea that these untrained, ill-prepared children could be playing against the best in the country, that's something that is effectively one step down from a combat sport. And that not only was it allowed to happen, they were fulfilling a market gap. It was when we spoke to the guy that does the matchmaking. He's like, oh, these guys are perfect. Everyone knows they're going to lose. Everyone knows they're going to get destroyed, but at least they're going to take the game. And, you know, one of them might play, do one play that's good, and that might get them a college scholarship. And you're like, okay, so you're sending these 40 kids out there. 39 of them are definitely going to get hurt, and one of them might get something, but probably not. And they're all going to get, like, it's this.
It's like Squid Game. Yeah.
It's totally like Squid Game.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. Enter ServiceNow. It puts AI to work for people, for employees, for developers, and even your customers, removing frustration and supercharging productivity. On our intelligent platform, AI isn't just a promise. It's happening today. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. To learn more, visit servicenow.com/AI for people.
I feel like your guys' backgrounds are very humble, because if I won an Oscar recently, when I would log onto a Zoom, it would just be, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, was that in my, I'm so sorry, the camera angle was off. So congratulations on that. But I'm also, are you guys, and I was reading in the Hollywood Reporter article, I think, Trayvon, that you were doing, how like that was in COVID, and now this with like some potential Emmy buzz definitely coming up with the strike and everything. But are you guys have had such acclaim with these documentaries you're doing, and I just have to imagine there are more on deck. Do you feel like, are you kind of like in a space right now where you're like seeking out more stories? Is there already stories that you're aware of? Ones that you're like, guys, like everyone should be talking about this?
I mean, we kind of just gravitate towards what's interesting to us, and a lot of things come our way that we end up saying yes or no to, mostly no's, because I think the reason why what we do ends up being so high quality is because when it comes to documentaries, you need a lot of honesty and you need a lot of openness, and you need subjects who are a part of a story who are going to actually talk and talk in a way that is worth your time as a viewer. And that, to me, I think is the most important thing. There's so many documentaries that try to tease you into thinking they're going to talk about some big salacious thing that happened or some crazy story, and you watch it and it's like you don't even have half the people you need to make the story interesting. And so if I'm going to ask you to spend 90 minutes of your time, or if it's a short 35, 40 minutes of your time with this subject, it has to be worth it. It has to be the thing that you need from that story, from that particular thing. And so I think that's why we're so picky about what we take on in terms of documentaries and subject matter, because it's going to take us 2 years, a year and a half of our lives to make this story, and it should be worth it. It should be something that has the impact this film has had on people, which, you know, we wanted it to be good and we hoped people would like it. We didn't anticipate as much love and enjoyment people have gotten out of it, but it's what we set out to do, at least.
And I love that you were saying too, like dedicating the time to it and just having what is needed to tell the story properly. Cause I do feel like, and I mean, not putting down any other documentaries, but there are a lot of times me and Sarah will go to watch one and it's like an 8-part thing. And the first 3 parts, I'm like, well, okay, I don't know why we had that there. And then we get to the end.
I can think of one right now.
Yeah, and I feel like there's ones where you're like, okay, that was like an hour long thing about just like beaches, which I love a vacation. I don't know what's going on here. And you get to the end and you feel there's no answers or anything like that. And even I love just how you guys really put the entire documentary together, because like, while there wasn't like a little like ribbon with a bow, because it's a story that doesn't have a bow, and you were able to really give needed updates and to let people know. I feel it was a very satisfying watch in the sense it left me just like infuriated that the story happened, but like, and really I feel people are going to be like more cautious about if anything like that could happen again.
That was the hope, is that people will see it and want it to not happen ever again.
Right.
I was also curious about like some of the parents that you spoke to. Was that something that was difficult, was like trying to get access to the parents?
I think the parents don't get enough sympathy or understanding for what they actually went through. Like, I see a lot of people online blaming the parents and want to put the blame on the parents, but like, you don't understand what it's like to have your kid in front of you going, "Mom, this is my opportunity to do the thing that I've always wanted to do. Please don't stand in the way of that." Mm. Like, and at the time that this is being asked of them, they don't know it's a scam. So of course, if you know your kid's got 1 year left in high school and this coach has told them, like, I've shown you everything you need to see as part of my scam to make you believe I can achieve that for them. Of course, as a parent, you would say yes, because every kid, like most of the kids in the movie are telling you, like, "Mom, come on, let me do this. Mom, don't get in the way of me. Like, this is my chance. This is my chance." And so when the parents do find out it's a scam, they all acted accordingly and they tried to mitigate as much of that as they could. And so it's easy to sit on the sideline and go, "Oh, these parents are stupid for letting their kids get duped." But it's like, I don't have kids, and I know I can only imagine the pressure you would feel if your kid saying, "Mom, this is my dream. Don't get in the way of it."
And I feel like these days anybody can make a convincing website and like yeah. have you fooled, you know?
totally.
If it's a new school, like, what do you? How much can you investigate that?
Well, and also, like, you know, they have a video that shows you the $200 million school that they're going to build. They have legitimately a schedule against the biggest teams in the country. They were not a school, but they were a football program of sorts. Like, there was no training, there was no practice, there was no game plan, but they did have games organized against these big teams, which was enough for the kids. Because IMG, St. Francis Academy, to a certain aged football player, you know, to a kid in high school, this is Tom Brady, this is LeBron, these are the things they want to hear. And if you're going to be playing against them, that gives you a level of currency that you can trade on with these kids. And the kids are blinded to everything else. They don't care about where they're staying. They don't really care about the school aspect of it. And as Trayvon says, they're going, "Mom, come on, Mom." And also, Roy wasn't going and looking at, he wasn't talking to kids from the kind of backgrounds where there would have been the resources and time to do a full background check on this sort of stuff. He was going intentionally right. going for kids mm-hmm. that were in a position where this level of hope and this level of opportunity is a bell that rings very, very loudly, because not very many people are coming to these kids' front doors and ringing any bell of opportunity or any bell of hope. And that's what makes it even worse for us, is that you're approaching people, you're giving people hope who need it the most, and you know you're lying when you do it.
That's what, yeah, it felt like it was sort of like he was holding the elevator door and he's like, it's about to close, jump on, exactly. or like, you're just going to stay on the ground level forever. And watching it too, it kind of made me look at high school athleticism in like a different way. It made me realize how football could really be more of an entertainment industry in addition to sports. Cause I kept on thinking, I was like, oh, this happens also with like child stars and like people starting out, where it's kind of like what you were saying, where it's like a little kid who's like, "This is my dream." Because you hear also in that type of industry too, a lot of like taking advantage and like being misguided and everything can happen. And because I was trying to, because at first when I was watching, I was sort of in a mind where I was like, "Oh my God, the parents." But then when I finished, I was like, "Wow, what really could you say? Like, you're not going to be the parent who like squashes your kid, who you know is talented at it too. And you have to believe that they're the star they want to be." And I kind of realized, I was like, "Oh, that happens in so many different industries that correlate in a weird way."
100%. Because it's, you know, I think in a way you kind of have this thing, because it's sports, it's like binary, either you're good or you're not. Yeah. And it's not like the village that surrounds you dictates so much of your path, right? I mean, Kobe, Steph, you know, like these are the kids of basketball players. Like, there's so many obvious ways that you can track that it isn't just the innate ability that dictates the path, right? And so these kids all have that innate ability, and they've been told they have it since they were kids, and they've been told that it's the thing, it's their ticket, it's their way. And then just at the point in time when they're having to wrestle with the fact that probably not just because of their own efforts or their hard work, or, you know, partly because of a whole combination of things, that path is beginning to be pulled away from them. Somebody turns up and goes, no, all you have to do is come over here and work hard, and I guarantee you got this. You know, that's a powerful, and it is a bit like, you know, being a singer. It is a bit like entertainment, because you know that there are a lot of great singers in the world who've got great personalities and great style and great vibe, but you need that support around you. You need someone showing you the path to have a shot. And that is true of sports as well.
I don't think I have any other questions. Danny,
I know. I feel like I feel the main question I have is for everybody listening. Why the hell have you not watched this yet? Because it is such a good documentary. It was one of the ones too, where I like immediately just like texted my friends. I'm like, okay, I'm going to want to talk about this when we get to dinner. So like, watch it right now. So congratulations to you too, because it really is so well done and just such like a story that makes you, like, it's one of the ones where you're just watching, being like rewinding to be like, did he just say that? is that what just happened?
Thank you
so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Very much.
And thank you for taking the time to chat with us too.
Of course. Thank you.
Have a lovely weekend.
So guys, watch BS High. It's on Max. And like we said before, you do not have to be a football fan. You do not have to know anything about sports. It is so, so interesting.
It's really well done. And you know me and Sarah are honest about our documentaries. The long ones are a little too long. We tell you, this one, perfection. And I mean, they were just so awesome too. And I feel like I'm just excited for what they do next too.
Agree. And if you want some more documentary recommendations, follow us on Instagram at Not Another True Crime, or follow me at Sarah Lameem.
And you can follow me at Cashmere Danny, Cashmere with a K.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico, Sean Kilby, and Rebecca Sosmacat. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at Not Another True Crime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send all of your emails to natc@betches.com.
Betches.